Welcome to Baird's Global Investment Banking Podcast. I am Rhett Braunschweig, a director at Baird. My day job is an investment banker, and I specialize advising companies in technology and business services sectors. Today, I'm helping kickstart Baird's podcast series, where we intend to share with you perspectives from thought leaders on topics we believe to be relevant to the world we live in today and the world we'll face in the future. Today on our podcast, I'll be talking with Brian Whitman with Alvarez & Marsal, often simply referred to as A&M by people in the industry. A&M is a global consulting firm that provides advisory, business performance improvement, and turnaround management services to corporates. At A&M, Brian is a managing director within their restructuring and turnaround group in Chicago. He's also the co-head of the Midwest region. Brian has 25 years of experience advising companies requiring performance improvement and financial restructuring across a wide range of industries. He has led complex engagements for companies, secured lenders, and creditors, and he has served in both interim management and advisory roles. Brian, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Rhett.
Brian, part of your role includes serving as an interim management position for your clients. And you know, just wanted to see if you could share with us a few of your more recent roles to give our audience and participants a view as to the type of roles and positions you've played in the past.
Sure. So I do a mix of interim management and advisory work. From an interim management perspective, I served as the CFO of Horizon Global, which is a company based in Detroit, publicly traded, that makes trailer hitches, towing products, anything you need for trailering and towing, about an $850 million revenue company. And I took them through, as interim CFO, a process of renegotiating covenants, raising additional capital, and putting together a business plan to continue a turnaround effort that they were going through. Currently, I'm advising a number of clients, both in bankruptcy and out of bankruptcy. I'm advising a manufacturing client, as well as a company that's actually in the nonprofit space, both through the harrowing times that we are in today.
And I understand you've played quite a few different kind of management roles over time, whether it be CFO, Chief Revenue Officer, and then an advisory perspective, helping clients go through restructurings, go through turnaround situations, and understanding that no restructuring or turnaround situation is the same. I mean, how does today differ versus what you've experienced in the past?
It definitely is different today. We've seen crises before that have been induced by the financial system and the crisis in 2008. We've seen very industry-specific issues at points in time in the auto industry or in oil and gas and other industries. What we're seeing today in terms of both the breadth of really every single industry, every single company being affected in some fashion, as well as how quickly this has happened and how deep the changes have happened from really seemingly overnight, going from this is a supply chain issue where we're concerned about getting product out of Chinese plants to a situation where production and distribution facilities in the U.S. are being shuttered if you're not in something that's deemed essential and your employees are all either furloughed or working from home. So it's been a very fast-moving and very deep type of situation in a way that I don't think we've seen in the past.
And from that perspective, if you could talk a little bit, from two angles. One is, from the operational side, I mean, what differs today versus what you've experienced in the past? And then also, from a financial, perspective, what are you seeing as a difference versus, past crises or downturns?
Sure. So from an operational perspective, oftentimes we're brought in to a company that has been experiencing operational challenges for quite some time. And you're looking at making changes to the operations, whether that be closing certain facilities, narrowing the focus on certain product lines, or just simply cutting out certain costs in the operations. But typically you're doing that at a point in time where you can assess how much liquidity, how much runway you have, and you can make those changes in a somewhat stable situation. Here, you have many companies where the factories have closed, or if the factories haven't closed, the customers' revenue has dropped off, and we're seeing clients where, you know, rather than typically you might see in an incidence a low double-digit revenue decline year over year, we're seeing on a weekly basis revenues dropping 70, 80, 90% year over year, depending on what industry you're in. So assessing those operational issues in that circumstance, in this circumstance, is really a bit different, and really need to take some, you know, quick macro actions to save the business versus some of the fine-tuning and longer-term strategic actions that you might be able to take in other situations. From a financial perspective, we are seeing that you have banks being somewhat accommodating. You know, they understand today is not the day to force somebody into liquidation. We are seeing government support, although the exact specifics of how some of that support really affects different companies are still a little bit difficult to discern. So we see banks in a little bit of a different posture than necessarily in the past, and certainly differences versus the 2008 crisis. But that said, financing is tough to come by, and if you were in trouble prior to this crisis, it's not necessarily available for you.
And I mean, in terms of your business, you know, how has activity trended, you know, as of late? I imagine, you know, your phones are ringing off the hook. I mean, you know, what does activity look like for you, and what are the typical inquiries you're getting from clients, you know, today?
We have definitely seen a surge of activity. This had been already a busy time for us. There's certain industries that were already struggling. Certain industries were impacted by tariff issues last year. Oil and gas has been in a difficult position for quite some time. What's been interesting about the calls we've been getting now is the breadth of both the types of industries the calls are coming from, as well as getting calls from companies who really had not thought about these types of issues before. Companies that were not managing liquidity day to day because they weren't in a liquidity issue and suddenly find themselves in this circumstance for the first time.
And for those businesses that, you know, are faring okay, obviously, yeah, I think everybody's facing challenges today, but you know, they're faring okay. I mean, what are some of the things they could be doing to shore up liquidity, improve their financial position? You know, effectively, if you were running one of these organizations today, I mean, what are some of the basics that you would be doing?
The focus immediately is, what can you cut? How can you reduce your outflows as little as possible, particularly where the opportunity to sell your product or operate your business is significantly constrained? And you need to match those outflows to the inflows that you're getting. So starting, unfortunately, with payroll, you know, we see people, factories are closed, you need to furlough your workers. You look at salaried workforces, and are there opportunities to either reduce temporarily your workforce, to take salary reductions to try to reduce outflows, but try to keep people employed? Where are there other opportunities to reduce costs? We see people looking at opportunities not to pay their rent, to negotiate short-term forbearances with their landlords, opportunities to defer payments to suppliers, whether through negotiation or simply stretching out those payables. We see people looking at CapEx very closely, and certainly it's in some respects hard to spend CapEx at a time that when people may not be able to come into the facility, but really limiting CapEx, limiting in all cases both the initial action of having the expense as well as trying to delay the payment as long as possible. And then on the flip side, where are there opportunities to try to make sure you could bring in some revenue or some receipts during this period of time, both opportunities to make sure you're continuing to be as aggressive as possible collecting receivables from your customers, you know, where there's opportunities to continue to try to generate revenue in this environment. We see a lot of companies shifting and seeing continued online sales, even if their physical locations are closed, and you know, where there's opportunities to pick up that revenue. And then looking again to the government programs that have come out and where there are some opportunities for different companies to take advantage of those programs.
And then if you're a business more in dire straits, you know, you're significantly impacted by the shutdown. You know, we've seen clients in the hospitality, their travel, leisure sector, in the event sector, in their retail and restaurant, you're seeing significant disruption, or manufacturing businesses in states that have been impacted by shelter in place. You know, for those businesses that are being severely impacted, I mean, what is your advice to those companies? What are things that they should be considering, beyond the basics?
So first and foremost, you have to be able to save the business and live to fight another day. So that means you have to preserve some liquidity. That said, you want to look at what you can do without cutting into the bone, such that as we start to come out of this crisis, you're still positioned to reopen, whether they be stores, restaurants, factories. You're in the position to do that and try to move as quickly as possible back to a normal state. As you look at that, though, this is the opportunity to look at where were there low-performing locations in the past that perhaps should be closed permanently. Where are there product lines that are low-performing in the past, and now is the time to cut them out? So there's those types of decisions. And really, it's getting down to what is your absolute minimum burn rate during this period of time? How much can you shrink down to a very core set of people that still have key functions to perform, and how do you minimize that as much as possible to make sure that you have sufficient runway to get from here to the other side of what is still a very uncertain time frame as to what that other side is.
And from that perspective, if we're going through this, and I think initially folks felt like, there could be a V-shaped type recovery, right? Short period of disruption and then a quick, bounce back. As the weeks go by, it does look like certain industries are going to face uncertainty and perhaps, reduced demand for an elongated period of time. What are you seeing across your client base, and what are you advising your clients to do where it feels like this is going to be a more prolonged impact or downturn for their business?
I think that's right. That's exactly what everyone we're talking to is wrestling with, is how deep do you cut, and then how long do you assume some of those measures have to stay in place. We've really seen a shift in that, a pretty dramatic shift as the last couple of weeks have gone by, to thoughts of having certain operations shut down for 2 weeks and then a very quick return to normal, to now people looking at extended shutdowns of various facilities of 6 to 8 to 10 weeks. And that combined with an assumption that there is a very gradual restoration on the top line, and therefore a gradual restoration of the need to produce product and so forth.
Any examples you can share of what your clients are facing, and what they're doing to survive in the current state and try to rebound quickly when their part of the economy does reopen?
Sure. So, I think that what we've seen is, I'll give some examples here. And we have a client where the factory, you could just close the factory doors, but they have certain processes that are very difficult to turn off and on. So they're keeping certain components of their manufacturing operations essentially warm to make sure that they are ready to go, that they don't incur sort of the full cost of a shutdown and then a startup from a cold factory, but cutting as much as possible to make sure that the costs during the downtime are as limited as possible. So we're seeing things like that on the manufacturing side. We're seeing people take, unfortunately, the steps of that we've seen in the past of having to suspend 401k matches and other types of employee programs. As I mentioned before, we're considering seeing people reduce salaries, not on a permanent basis, but talking about reductions that might last 3 to 6 months in order to help offset and provide some additional liquidity. And having those similar discussions on the side with some of their third parties, whether those be landlords, having conversations with banks to extend principal payments or extend maturities in order to provide some additional runway. We see companies certainly drawing down on their revolvers in order to maximize the amount of cash on hand and the flexibility they have during this process. I have a client that part of their operation is a seasonal operation where they operate certain activities in the summer. And they're looking very closely at, are they going to be able to operate the way they used to do or typically do in the summer, or are they going to have to remain closed and give up their summer season? So those are some of the things that we see people working through. And I think as everyone's working through that, they're keeping an eye, what are their competitors doing? What are people in adjacent industries doing? And how are people dealing with this across geographies, and what recoveries are people seeing across geographies? One of the things that a number of our clients are seeing is that the timing in the geographies is different. So if their footprint spans different countries, the start of the cycle has been different in different countries, and we're seeing sort of the depth or length of the cycle be different in different countries, where on the one hand, China plants are seemingly back open and operating, and you have Mexico, which is just starting more recently to shut down facilities several weeks behind what we saw in the U.S. So you really see different timelines in different geographies, which has challenges, but also gives you an opportunity to learn and see what the curve is coming back out as different countries start to see the other side.
You mentioned, when we started, a nonprofit client that you're working with. I mean, just out of curiosity, I mean, what is that world seeing, as they go through this impact? I would imagine, and can use some logic as to what the impact could be. But I'm just curious, given you're in the thick of it, what are they seeing, and what are some of the challenges they're facing?
It's interesting, and I've been talking to actually a couple different nonprofits over the last few weeks. They are seeing that, first of all, the programs they operate are being disrupted because the programs they operate are face-to-face type programs that are not occurring in this environment. So they see a disruption on the program side. They are dependent on, for part of their revenue, on donations and events that are not happening at this point in time. So you have both events suspended and donations not top of mind for people in this current environment. So you see nonprofits having, I think, some of the same struggles as for-profit companies have, as their operations are being disrupted. But at the same time, depending on the nonprofit, their mission in many cases involves helping people in trouble. And you want to be able to continue that mission. So they're having those same struggles of how do they make sure their mission is continuing at this critical time while having the restrictions on the ability to actually provide the programming they typically provide, as well as the financial hardships of trying to provide programming while seeing the cash coming in the door going down.
The last question that I had, Brian, is you know, and I think it's one, you know, perhaps one of the most important questions. I mean, in an industry in a role where face-to-face interactions is critical, it's almost what you were talking about before, you know, to effectively manage business change, you know, requires, you know, face-to-face interactions. We were talking about this at a different point in time, you know, the little things that you pick up in some of the conversations, right? The reading of body language. You know, it's just when you're advising folks through restructuring or turnarounds, face to face is critical, but you're not allowed to have that today. So how are your teams interacting with clients, and what have you found to be most effective in the work from home environment we face today?
It definitely is a challenge. I think people see it, I'm sure, across all businesses. For us, we typically are on site at our clients. We're having face-to-face meetings with lenders and other stakeholders in cases. And you know, I think those face-to-face interactions have tremendous benefits in terms of building relationships, building trust, gathering information at a much, you know, more detailed level than a simple question and an answer. But you know, having that opportunity to have that level of follow-up that happens much more when you're in a face-to-face setting than when you're on the phone, it is a challenge. What we are doing is certainly taking advantage of technology as much as possible, a lot more audio conferences, a lot more video conferences. I think I've seen more people on video conferences in the last week or two than I ever have before. And you know, trying to share documents back and forth on the screen, have more regularly set touch points to try to really balance out the informal communications that happen when you're on site by having more set touch points during the day with, you know, both internally with our teams as well as externally with clients, to try to make up for that informal communication that happens as you're walking down the hall or just walk into somebody's office and ask a question. Those are all steps that we're taking. But I think, you know, while this may be a catalyst, this event may be a catalyst that causes people to travel a little bit less and use video conferencing technology a little bit more, I still think that there's not much of a substitute for the face-to-face interaction that we've enjoyed in the past.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, I think this is a good place to end it. And thank you, Brian, for taking the time to share your insights with us. You know, to our listeners, we hope that this conversation was helpful as we continue navigating these challenging times. And we look forward to joining you on a future podcast. Robert W. Baird & Company Incorporated is a member of SIPC. Robert W. Baird Limited is authorized and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For more information, go to rwbaird.com.